Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday, November 20th meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules and Executive Appointments. And we have a fairly good list of appointees, the first of whom has already joined us. We've been chatting with her informally for the last few minutes, and so I will begin by opening a public hearing on the appointments of Ann Curry and Kurt Wilcox to the Board of Trustees of the University of Oregon. And we'll start with Ms. Ann Curry, who has joined us by telephone. She is in Geneva, Switzerland, where she's covering some international negotiations there. I understand it's a little after 11 o'clock at night, and she's been kind enough to join us by phone. So, Ms. Curry, we would love to hear from you just briefly about your interest in serving on the U of O board, and then we'll open it up for questions from our members. And we also were just joined by Senator Jenny Burdick, who's here fresh from her hip replacement and going strong. So welcome, Senator Burdick. This is Ann Curry we're about to hear from. Please go ahead.
Well, hello, everyone. Hello, everyone. It's great to speak to you. I'm sorry I'm not there in person, and I appreciate your willing to let me speak to you by telephone. And I was surprised, actually, by an email and then a call from those inside the University of Oregon asking if I was interested in becoming a member of the board. And as I thought about it and weighed the difficulties of my schedule and my work with the possibilities that I might be able to contribute to the university, what I was thinking about that made me sort of most interested in the idea is that I was the exact kind of person that the University of Oregon and the state university system was, that I was lucky enough to have the system as a way of rising up. No one in my family had ever graduated from college when I went to the University of Oregon. I was a poor girl, the daughter of a military, career military man. In Oregon, neither anyone on my mother's side and my father, or my father's side of the family, had ever gone to college. And as I was planning to go to college, just a year before, my father, on the GI Bill, was beginning college classes because he wanted to become a teacher. And he'd always wanted to become a teacher, but he was raised fairly, very modestly, and joined the military because it was not an option to go to college. So finally on the GI Bill, he was able to go to college. So he and I went to college at the same time. He went to Southern Oregon State College, and I went to the University of Oregon. Wow. And I had never even imagined that I would go to college. I never imagined it so much that I actually only applied to one college, and that was the University of Oregon, and I applied at the last minute, and only because it had a journalism school, only because some teachers at my high school in Ashland, Oregon, really encouraged me to go to college because they thought I might do well at it, and so much so that they had actually even recommended me for a couple of very small scholarships, and I got them, and so I suddenly had this opportunity to go to college because even then my parents couldn't afford send me to college. So University of Oregon, thank goodness, said yes to me, which was a big surprise. I never even visited the college when I applied. I had no idea even what college would be like. In my family, I have two kids. We talked about college. We talked about college for years. But in my family, it was never discussed because it wasn't an option. And the University of Oregon really opened up for me a whole new world. It allowed me to work as a work-study student. I worked during the summers. I worked my entire time at the University of Oregon, except for the last couple of months. I allowed myself a small loan to finish college. And I never knew from year to year whether I was going to graduate because of the financial issue. But because the University of Oregon gave me this this open door, you're the same. It really treated me as if I was any other student, rich or poor. It gave me the world, and it allowed me, because of my journalism degree aspirations, to really study in every department. So the way it worked then is that 25% of your coursework in journalism was in journalism, and 75% of your coursework was in every other subject that you could pick, as long as you filled your your requirements, which was just a miracle for me. It was an amazing thing. I studied cultural geography. I mean, I studied everything. I thought about architecture. I studied landscape architecture, all kinds of courses, the Bible as literature, you know, all this kind of material that I never even thought of, the Bible as literature, for goodness sake. I mean, I'd read it, in Sunday school, but never as literature. So the whole world really just opened up, and I was able to graduate in 4 years. Well, you know, Oregon has, and this is, I think, what I was thinking about as a member of the board, and that is that, you know, Oregon has, in its culture and its ideas, something I think that's very valuable for the rest of the country. I really believe this. There is a strength of conviction. There is a willingness to step outside the box, to think outside the box. There's a willingness to think about the needs of the group, which you see a lot in a lot of the land use planning decisions that are made. And yet there's also an effort, a struggle to, with that group protection, to also allow for the individual to have rights to succeed and grow. I think that in this philosophy, which has always been what Oregon has been to me, you know, there are many young men and women who are unable to go on to higher education. And so I think that there's something that they have to offer that's incredibly valuable. And so I think the idea of creating an opportunity, not only for Oregon to be known, the University of Oregon to be known outside, which it's done such a great job of on its own and with great leadership, Dave Frommeyer, others, long before this conversation. But I think that there is this this really need for the people of Oregon to, we need to find a way for our bright young people who don't have opportunities to go to college because of their family finances to find a way to excel at the university. And I think that that's a real key. It's not just key for Oregon, but it's key as representatives of Oregon to the country and the world. And so that's one of the things I think a lot about. I think that the kind of subject matter also the University of Oregon offers, because of my own personal experience, having been able to study in all these different parts of the university, and the quality of the teachers is really remarkable. I'm just really pleased to even be asked, and should I not be chosen, I'm actually okay with that as well. But I wanted to, if I am a candidate that can help the university, I'm certainly happy to stand up and be considered.
Great. Well, thanks very much. I think I'll open it up for questions, but I think speaking for the legislature in general, we were delighted that you were able to fit this into your busy schedule. At our hearing a couple of months ago, we heard from most of the rest of the nominees to your board, and they are really an impressive group. So I think it's going to raise the profile. I mean, just your presence on this board, having a board like that, will raise the profile of the institution greatly, and I really appreciate your emphasis on affordability, which I think is one of the challenges that we as a legislature are dealing with, too. So hopefully this will be one of the tools to try to do something about that as well. Okay, questions for Ms. Ann Curry from members? No, Senator Starr and I had a chance to chat with this nominee informally before everybody else got here.
I'll just make a comment.
Senator Burdick.
And I am also a former journalist, and I really appreciate you bringing those skills, which are unique to that profession, to this board. I just think you'll add a tremendous amount to the board.
Great. Thanks for that.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, I don't see any other questions for you. So the way this works is we'll be acting on your appointment along with all the others before us today at the close of today's hearing with a recommendation from our committee. And then tomorrow the full Oregon Senate meets in the afternoon And that at that point is when the appointment would become official. So I'm sure somebody will be letting you know the outcome of that, but I am pretty hopeful about it. So thanks again for your willingness not only to take the time it will take to serve, but also to fit this hearing into your schedule. So good luck there in Geneva.
Oh, thank you so much, and it was a pleasure to speak to you all, and thanks for even considering me for this choice. It's certainly a long way from being the girl who didn't know whether she would ever go to college to be in a moment where she's speaking to senators thinking about whether or not she would be a member of a board of trustees for that same university. So for me, this has been a major highlight just to speak to you, and thank you for your contribution, and I wish you every good luck from here, and perhaps we'll talk again.
Great. Thanks very much, and we'll be in touch soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And next I'll call forward Kurt Wilcox, who's here in the room, and he is also an appointee for the Board of Trustees of the University of Oregon. If you'd like to just tell us a little bit briefly about your background, why you'd like to serve on this board.
Sure. Thank you, Senator Rosenbaum and committee members. I'm Kurt Wilcox. I work at the University of Oregon as a researcher in the College of Education in a little corner of the college called Into Careers. We produce websites for about 22 different states. We actually bring revenue into the university. Our websites focus on career choice and aim primarily at high school age youth, although with the bad economy, more focus on young adults as well. And I do research work on those websites. I am the person who has been nominated to be the non-faculty staff representative on the U of O board. I have a 40-year association with the University of Oregon. I moved out to Oregon from New Jersey back in the early 1970s to go to graduate school, and I eventually got a master's degree in labor and industrial relations from the U of O. While in graduate school, I worked at a place called Oregon Career Information Systems, which is actually the partner organization that I work for right now, Into Careers. In addition to being an employee and a student at the University of Oregon, I've also taught as well through the Labor Education and Research Center. While one of the faculty members was on sabbatical, I've been an adjunct instructor an adjunct instructor for about 10 years. There, also taught at the University of Iowa briefly. So I have a long association with the university. I have been connected with the university in a variety of different ways, and I guess I should also mention that all my family members are current or former attendees at the U of O. My spouse has both an undergraduate and graduate degree. My daughter graduated from the U of O Teach program last summer and is now a second grade teacher in the Eugene schools. My son is a current senior at the university, majoring in public policy planning and management. In addition, I have served previously on a state board, was called at that time the Oregon State Scholarship Commission. It's now the Oregon Student Access Commission, appointed by Governor Goldschmidt and reappointed by Governor Roberts, and I chaired that committee for several years, that commission. So I have a long association with the university. I have a deep commitment to it. I want very much to see it continue to grow and prosper. I'm very appreciative of the opportunity to serve on the board of trustees. And I would also say I think it's very appropriate from my perspective that if we are having a board at the university, that it consists of representatives of the university community, staff, faculty, and students, and I'm very pleased to be part of it.
Thank you. Okay, so I'll open it up for questions, And I did have a question for you. I wanted to ask you about one feature of this appointment that has been under some discussion. And I had an opportunity to look at one of our existing statutes, which is ORS 351-020(1), and that governs the current State Board of Higher Education appointees. And there's a provision in that statute that faculty members who are members of the State Board of Higher Ed may not participate in any discussions or action by the board or attend any executive session of the board if it involves collective bargaining issues that affect those faculty. So my question is whether you would agree or think it's appropriate that this Board of Trustees should adopt bylaws similar to that that would provide that faculty and staff members not participate in any discussions or action by the board or attend any of those executive sessions involving collective bargaining issues similar to the provisions for the existing State Board of Higher Education.
I think the simple answer is yes. It seems to me that what we want to do as members of the board is focus on the concerns of the university as a whole. If there are particular situations for a faculty member or a classified staff such as myself where the conversations are going to involve collective bargaining, I think it would be very appropriate for us not to be part of those conversations. We're still at the early stages as a board. We haven't drawn up bylaws or anything yet, but it would seem to me that would be an appropriate part, just as there would be, it would be appropriate to have conflict of interest language in a set of bylaws.
Okay, thank you. Other questions?
Not a question, just a comment.
Senator Byers?
I've known Kurt for a number of years, and just a comment is he's just really a very strong member of the Eugene-Springfield community. I've seen him on both sides of the issues, and I think he'll make a great board member.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. Senator Farrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and thank you for the addition to the record about the other boards' prohibitions against those obvious conflicts. Mr. Wilcox, you served also in the role of chief negotiator for SEIU Local 503 Sublocal 85. Could you describe a little of those experiences and how they might color your thinking on the board?
So I did serve as our chief bargaining representative. When we negotiate with the university system, there is someone from each of the campuses who comprise that bargaining team, and I was the person from the University of Oregon. This last year, we began bargaining in February and just concluded negotiations in September. From my perspective, it was very difficult negotiations. The university system sought to take away many long-standing provisions in our contract this year. So it was a difficult struggle. We did finally reach a conclusion, I think a very successful one, for the employees and for the university system, and that contract has now been ratified.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
The Senate Bill 270 was a bill in which you testified, on which you testified and offered an opinion that whenever boards would discuss anything related to the financial interests of teachers, faculty, members, others that are also represented on the board, where their self-interest was concerned, that those members of the board, that institutional board, should recuse themselves from that activity. And I'd like to hear a little discussion about that. Do you still hold the opinion that if a board member finds themselves in a discussion that involves their own self-interest, that they financial self-interest, that they should recuse themselves?
Senator Farrioli, I think I did just attempt to answer that question as Senator Rosenbaum asked it. I believe that should apply to all board members. If there's any financial interest involved, that they should be recused from those discussions.
Madam Chair, just an observation. I really appreciate your discussion in that area, and I hold the same opinion as you do. But as you pointed out, I don't know that it is entirely the responsibility of the Board or Commission to adopt the appropriate bylaw. Perhaps it's the responsibility of the legislature to take a measure in the same way as we have for other boards and commissions and simply make it an issue that we clarify in statute. So as much as I appreciate the integrity of the folks that are proposed for membership, and as I look over this list of highly qualified board members, not just Mr. Wilcox, but all of them, I think it's incumbent on us to put them in a situation where they do not face that moral dilemma about whether or not the discussion proceeds far enough that they should self-recuse. I think possibly it's our responsibility to clarify those things and not put people into an ambiguous situation. So, Madam Chair, I think the responsibility is on the legislature to make these clarifications, even though I would expect the boards to clarify for their own members' safety, ethically and otherwise. I think it's our responsibility to resolve these issues before we ask people to serve on these boards. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Farrioli. Any other questions for Mr. Wilcox? Okay. Well, and I, too, I think, like Senator Beyer, have had the pleasure of knowing Mr. Wilcox for a long time. I think maybe even have taken a class or two from him, and I am quite confident that you'll do a great job and glad that you're willing to take this on.
Thank you very much.
And you'll get to know Ann Curry in the process.
I know. I was disappointed she wasn't here today.
If I could have a follow-up question.
Oh, sure.
Part of the discussion has been whether or not the decision was ever made, and it would be a decision made by the governor who proposes the appointments, as to whether or not members who are proposed who have potential conflicts of interest would be non-voting members or voting members. And I just wondered if I could expect Mr. Wilcox, at least speaking for himself, to make the same level of commitment to serving the university if he were a non-voting member as he would if he were a voting member of this board.
I would answer that in two ways. One, yes, I am committed to the university, and I would have served if it was as ex officio as opposed to a voting member. But I would also say, I think it is. I'm very pleased that the governor chose to give votes to both the faculty members and to the staff member, because I think it helps us maintain standing with the other members of the boards of trustees. It's I think a vote of confidence that staff and faculty deserve to be full members of the board, and I appreciate he's done that.
Madam Chair, I appreciate the answer. I guess my observation would be this: in other situations where we've put people with a self-interest in a voting membership role on a board, we've come to regret that. And I guess the example that I would point out is we had to completely reconstitute the PERS board because we put members on that board with an instruction that they should manage PERS for the benefit of members. And the result was an unsustainable situation. So I think it's incumbent on the legislature to make really clear that you don't put people with an interest on both sides of a question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your comment.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you very much for appearing.
Thank you very
And
much.
We'll be acting on your appointment at the close of today's hearing.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, I'll close this public hearing, and do we still have the next nominee? Okay, I'll open a public hearing on the appointment of Prashant Dubey to the Oregon Health Sciences University Board of Directors, and he has been waiting patiently all this time, I believe, from India. Mr. Dubey, I apologize if I butchered the pronunciation of your name. This is Senator Dianne Rosenbaum, Chair of the Committee on Rules, and Senators Beyer, Farrioli, Starr, and Burdick are waiting to hear from you about why you would like to serve on the OHSU board, so please go ahead.
Great. Chair Rosenbaum, thank you very much. This is Prashant Dubey. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you really well.
Great. Well, thank you. I'm honored to be here, Chair Rosenbaum, Vice Chair Farrioli, Senators Beyer, Burdick, and Starr. Thanks for making time to discuss this topic today. I, as you stated, am being appointed to the Oregon Health and Science University Board of Directors, and my interest in this is driven first and foremost by a civic duty of the highest order. Oregon is my adopted home state, and I came here in 1995 because my wife was doing her internship at OHSU, as a matter of fact. So my connection with OHSU is quite personal. And after coming here and planning to stay for 12 months, we ended up staying for almost 20 years with no plans to leave and have three children that are native Oregonians and will probably not want to leave the state or maybe leave at some point but come back and reside here. We're highly confident. From a professional perspective, I'm excited about my potential confirmation as a member of the board of directors, because I've spent about half of my career in healthcare strategy and healthcare strategy consulting with primary care institutions around the country. And being able to leverage that experience in the healthcare industry to the benefit of OHSU and hopefully all Oregonians is of great interest to me. I've also spent the other half of my career as an executive in entrepreneurial ventures, and I believe that OHSU is at a point in time where entrepreneurial thinking is very important in order to adjudicate a lot of the challenges and opportunities that exist at the institution today. And I think I'm excited about working in conjunction with the board, other members of the board who are experienced business executives, contributors to our society and our state in partnership. To discuss, debate, and decide these issues. And I will state that it's intimidating to follow Ann Curry because my story is not nearly as interesting as hers, even though I am in New Delhi and she's in Geneva. But hopefully I'll give you a good sense of my interest in being appointed to board.
Great. What are you doing in India?
I'm actually here on personal and professional reasons. From a personal perspective, I come here about once or twice a year and bring one of my three children with me to maintain a connection to at least half of our cultural heritage. My wife is Norwegian, so I try not to go nowhere in the winter.
Good choice.
And the other reason is from a professional perspective, I also interact with some folks in India, actually in the healthcare industry, that focus a lot on healthcare strategy in India and in Asia Pacific. So we are operating partners in a business together that looks at investments in organizations in the health and health IT sectors, especially in Asia. So that's the other reason I'm here. So healthcare is always a topic that's on my brain.
Great. Well, thanks. What time is it in New Delhi right now?
It is a little past 4 a.m.
Oh, my God. Well, thank you very much for getting up in the middle of the night to join us for this hearing. Do we have any other questions for Mr. Dubé?
No.
Okay, I think everybody is quite content to let you get back to sleep, and so enjoy the rest of your visit there, and we'll be acting on your appointment at the close of today's hearing.
Thanks so much, and I really appreciate the time you've spent with me today.
Great. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And I'll close that public hearing. Hopefully we're not going to wake anybody else up in the middle of the night anywhere. And I will next open a public hearing on the appointment of Melinda Eden to the Environmental Quality Commission, if she'd like to come forward. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee. And what we'd like to hear is just a little bit about your background and why you'd like to serve on the Environmental Quality Commission.
Thank you very much, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. My name is Melinda Eden. I live on a farm outside Milton Freewater. Nobody is more surprised to be here today than I am, as a retread, so to speak, on the Environmental Quality Commission. Most of my career has been spent steeped in environmental and energy issues as a journalist. I did then go to law school, and it seems like a good day to say that I received a degree from the University of Oregon School of Law. I don't know Ann Curry. And then I practiced law in the area of hazardous substances and had some contact with DEQ in terms of air and water quality and hazardous substance work. I did have a stint on the Environmental Quality Commission previously. I think the highlight of that 6 years was the approval of the permit for destroying chemical weapons at the depot outside of Hermiston. And I'm happy to report, if you don't know already, that the incineration building was torn down this week, which is one of the conditions of the permit that the commission imposed. I then worked on fish and wildlife issues and hydroelectric power issues as a member of the Oregon Power and it's the Northwest Power and Conservation Council. I represented Oregon for a few years on that body. And I view this opportunity as a good one to continue public service. And I appreciate having the opportunity to visit with you today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Any questions for Melinda? Go ahead, Senator Beyer.
Just a comment. I had the good pleasure to work for many years with Melinda while she while I was on the PUC and she was on the Northwest Power Planning Council. And we couldn't get anybody who's smarter or more pragmatic at dealing with things than Melinda is. So it was a great appointment.
Senator Beyer, thank you.
Yeah. I do have a question.
Yes, Senator Starr.
I'm curious to know how your affiliation with the Oregon Sheepdog Society will help to provide you insights on this commission.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, Senator Starr, I consider that to be part of my agricultural, I can't say upbringing because I wasn't born to it, but I've certainly had an agricultural education the last 21 years living in outside Milton Freewater. And I think it's an expression of my bossiness and the bossiness of border collies. I use border collies to help me with my flock of sheep. And so border collies are very sensitive to the environment.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. Yes, Senator Burdick.
I can't resist an opportunity to one-up Senator Beyer. I worked across the desk from you at AP back 40 years ago or thereabouts, and I followed your career, and it's been an amazing career of stellar accomplishments in so many different areas. And as an urban person, I especially appreciate it, knowing that Oregon is one state. We're not many states. We're one state, and to have your part of the state so well represented is I'm very grateful for that.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Senator Burdick, any other questions? Okay, I don't see any for you, so we'll be acting on your appointment at the close of the hearing today, and thank you for appearing today before us.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'll close the public hearing. Next, I'll open a public hearing on the appointment of Marvin Revol to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. And while he's coming forward, the next one we'll take up is the Trust for Cultural Development Board. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Marvin Revol, and that's spelled R-E-V as in Victor, O-A-L.
Great. And if you'd like to just tell us a little about your background and why you'd like to serve on the OLCC.
I'd like to serve on this particular board because I view this organization as one of those few governmental organizations that actually creates an opportunity for people to own and work at their own companies. As the immediate past chairman of the board of the Eugene Area Chamber of Commerce, economic development is extremely important to me. I see people in business and business as a whole as the great equalizer in America. I love that about that. I grew up in the inner city, in Kansas City, in a time where you were told a lot of what you could do and what you couldn't do. And over the years, I've learned that if you work hard and you go to school and you be a mean dad, like my dad was and I am, that you have a real opportunity to grow and push forward. Oregon is dominated by small businesses throughout the state. I own a regional commercial insurance brokerage, and we have offices in Eugene and Portland. And I get to compete with people like Marsh and Willis and Wells Fargo every day with other small companies. And we get to do that because we believe that we're as smart as they are. In fact, we think we're smarter than they are. This organization allows businesses and people to do just that. By the same token, I spent 20 years inside law enforcement, and I've seen how when people abuse this product, what it can have, and the effects it can have on their family and on the community as a whole. This organization also is involved in education, and that's a very important part. So it's kind of I get to do both. Now, I don't get to be a cop anymore. Don't get me wrong. I get to help people be in business if I can help with advice that's worth something. And get to help train people to use products responsibly. That would be a big honor for me.
Great. Thank you. Any questions? Go ahead, Senator Ferrioli.
Thank you. Mr. Revol, have you ever witnessed folks in authority, in administrative authority, abuse their administrative authority?
Yes, I have.
And I anticipate from the quickness of your answer that that's not a situation that you would find conducive if you were a member of the board.
That's not something you tolerate ever. Ever.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Ferrioli. Any other questions? Yes, Senator Beyer.
Hi, Marvin.
Good afternoon, Senator.
It seems like the day from it's the Eugene Springfield area and Old Home Weekend. OLCC and the industry is going through quite a bit of changes right now. We've kind of seen what's happened in Washington State. The commission is having quite a discussion now as to how to deal with that, open the system up a little bit more, yet keeping the right controls on. Do you have any thoughts about that? Or
I do. I watched the situation in Washington State unfold. I've talked with individuals before I ever knew that someone was interested in me being in this role. I found that it hurt small businesses, those men and women who were in that market. I think it's important that in our state we have more input from your organization as well as the governor's office, so we can create the kind of balance that will create opportunities but also protect the small businesses that are trying to make their living in this world.
Hey, I don't see any other questions. I wanted to say I really appreciate your bringing both your small business background and the perspective that this really is a setup in Oregon that supports small business, because I don't think people usually think of the OLCC stores or the people that operate them as small business people, but absolutely they are. And I hadn't really thought of it that way myself, that probably privatization largely does, you know, support large chain businesses that often probably force small business people out of the market. So I think that's a great perspective, and I think you're going to really provide something valuable on this commission. So
thank you, Senator.
Thank you for being willing to fit it in. I know it's not an easy thing when you're running a small business to take time out and go to meetings, but we appreciate you being here today and your willingness to serve.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I'll close the public hearing and next open a public hearing on the appointments of Mike Golub and Christian Van Dyke to the Trust for Cultural Development Board. Mike Golub, I believe, is here in person, and then we're going to be getting Mr. Van Dyke on the phone.
Chair Rosenbaum, Senators.
Why don't you hold on just a minute and I'll. Hi, is this Christian Van Dyke?
Yes.
Hi there. This is Senator Diane Rosenbaum, Chair of the Senate Rules Committee, and I've just opened a hearing on your appointment and that of Mike Golub to the Trust for Cultural Development Board. So we're going to ask Mike to go first, and what we'd like to hear is just a little bit about your backgrounds and why you would like to serve on the board of the Cultural Trust. So please go ahead, Mr. Golub.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum, Senators. I'm honored to be here and honored to be considered as a possible appointment to the Cultural Trust Board. The arts and culture and humanities have been a huge part of my family's life since my childhood, and I couldn't dance, couldn't carry a tune, couldn't draw worth a lick, played a very mediocre French horn, so I wisely chose a business, the sports business, to pursue. I'm currently the Chief Operating Officer of the Portland Timbers and the Portland Thorns, but my civic efforts and my philanthropy throughout the years have been really focused on the arts. I'm currently on the board of the Portland Center Stage. I was chairperson of the board for the last 2 years. I'm currently on the board of the Regional Arts and Culture Council in Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas counties, and have long had a love for the arts. And I'm a relatively relative new Oregonian, having lived here for about 8 years, but I have a deep love affair with our state, and I'd be deeply honored to be able to serve on the Cultural Trust, and I welcome any questions about the timbers or the arts.
Great. Any questions for Mr. Golub? Okay. And Mr. Van Dyke, would you like to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Thank you, Chair Woodlum and Senators. My name is, as indicated, Chris Van Dyke. I live in Bend, Oregon, and I think I'm a nominee for the Oregon Cultural Trust. I've lived in Oregon, God, I hate to admit that, almost 40 years. So I've been familiar with the trust over the last, I guess, about a decade. I'm a friend with Bob Speltz, who is the chair of the board there. And I come from a family where I'm the only person who was not professionally involved in the performing arts. So I've had a lifelong interest. My particular interest, I'm particularly drawn to the breadth of the work that the trust is doing in arts and the heritage and humanities, but it wasn't until talking to Chairman Speltz that I learned the details of the really unique funding structure for the Cultural Trust. And the last 25 years or so, after about 18 years with Nike and a number of other positions, I've worked in communications and would be very interested in just seeing what I could do to assist in getting the word out and building and strengthening the really very, very, very unique tax credit structure that funds the trust. So it's an honor to be nominated for this position, and very much an honor to talk to all of you. I appreciate very much being so flexible to arrange a call. I just couldn't be in state. I had to travel. So thank you very much for allowing me to communicate by telephone.
Great. Well, thanks for joining us. We've already heard from somebody in New Delhi, India, and then Ann Curry joined us from Geneva, Switzerland at the start of our hearing. So don't feel bad about not being here. I think they had probably a little farther to go by phone, but we understand how that works. So, okay. Well, do we have any questions for Mr. Van Dyke? So you mentioned that everybody else in your family is involved in performing arts?
Correct.
Are you related to Dick Van Dyke by any chance?
He is my father.
Ah, I really didn't know that. And we were just sitting here trying to Google you and figure out if that was the case for the committee administrator and I, but we didn't get there in time. So that's great. I had no idea that you had a famous father and that you lived in Oregon, so that's terrific.
Been here a long time, and actually moved to Oregon to clerk for the late Justice Denneke on the Oregon Supreme Court. I've been here since the early 70s, and I just actually spoke to my dad this weekend and told him I was a nominee for this position and would be talking to all of you, and he said, well, whatever you do, just don't behave like the mayor of Toronto.
Great. I see he hasn't lost a sense of humor.
No, he has not.
Right. That's great. Okay, well, I don't see any questions for you, so thanks very much. We'll be acting on your appointment and all of the others at the close of our hearing today, and then the full Senate will be voting tomorrow afternoon. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again, and thank you, Mr. Golub, too. And I'll close the public hearing. And next, I'll open a public hearing on the appointment of Jack Roberts as director of the Oregon Lottery Commission, if you'd like to come forward. Thanks for waiting so patiently, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you. It's actually been very entertaining, I have to admit.
Yeah. International travel, famous people, and everything in between. So.
That's right.
So please go ahead and tell us a little about your background and why you'd like to serve as the lottery director.
Well, I grew up in Oregon. I went to the University of Oregon and graduated from the School of Journalism, I think, a couple of years before Ann Curry. But since that's a common theme, I think, today is how many degrees of separation from Ann Curry. But I didn't unfortunately meet her then, or if I did, I didn't know she was Ann Curry yet. So then I went to University of Oregon Law School, got my JD, and went to New York University and got an LLM in tax law, but wanted to come back to Eugene where tax law is a little too narrow, especially. So I, for 10 years, practiced law in sort of a non-litigation business practice, represented small businesses, did a lot of negotiations, transactional work, had a lot of experience, which I think in many respects helps in something like the lottery, where there are similar types of negotiations and partnerships that you form with the private sector. I, after 10 years as an attorney, got the political bug, and so I was first appointed and then twice elected a county commissioner in Lane County, and after that was twice elected Oregon Labor Commissioner and ran the Bureau of Labor and Industries for 8 years. And after that, went back to sort of semi-private practice because I was executive director of a private nonprofit economic development agency called the Metro Partnership, replacing Senator Beyer, who had had that before me, and who before that was held by your House colleague, John Lively, who I believe today is his first day stepping back in as an interim to try to move that forward. So it's been through a lot of permutations over the years, and all three of us have in different capacities been dealing with it all that time. But it's also gave me an opportunity again to see the lottery from another perspective, because the funding for our organization, a lot of it came from lottery dollars, but also our ability to work with attracting and keeping companies had to do with the economic development resources that were there. And so when the governor's office approached me about this, it was totally unexpected. I'd never really thought about that capacity, but as I discussed with them the issues that are facing the lottery, which includes the fact that our lottery revenues have declined since the peak about 5 or 6 years ago and seem to have kind of stabilized at a somewhat lower level, but are also wrestling with issues like problem gambling and how do we help those who are afflicted with that, or who have not figured out how to deal with that challenge, and how do we balance that. And also the issues of concentrations of lotteries in parts of the state, particularly up in the Portland area, where that has an impact on the surrounding communities. And how do we deal with those issues while still trying to increase the revenue available to the state, which today, as you all know better than I, provides something in excess of $1 billion a biennium for education, economic development, and for environmental protection areas, particularly the parks and watershed protection and restoration. So all of those things were really intriguing to me as we talked about it and as I had a chance to talk to some people. And so that's why I'm very interested in this position.
Great. Any questions for Mr. Roberts?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Burdick.
Over the past few years since the lottery went in, when the lottery first went in, the commissions for the retailers were really very, very rich, and we got a lot of retailers signed up to market the lottery in a big hurry. Over time, those commissions have tended to go down somewhat, but according to numerous studies that have been done, the commissions are way out of proportion to what it really costs somebody in one of these businesses to keep a machine going. And in some cases, like the case of Dottie's Deli, for example, it has been, to a lay observer, it looks like a complete cash cow. And with the lottery struggling to meet their financial expectations in an environment where it's going down somewhat over recent years for a variety of factors. And as we approach another commission review period, another contract review period, I wanted to get your thoughts on how you'll approach this and how you'll analyze what is the appropriate level. And specifically, I'd like to hear that just because it's been done a certain way doesn't mean that it has to be done that way.
Well, I certainly agree with that. One of the advantages we will have this year going into it is that we, for the first time, have commissioned our own study to look at that, and that's supposed to be reporting in January, February of this next year, just as we're getting into the negotiations, which really are a year-long process because it's not just commissions, but it's also some of the other non-commissions. Some of the issues around the concentration of these licenses in areas that may have an impact on others, that's going to be part of the negotiations as well. So what I'm telling you is I think we do need to look at a whole range of issues. I think this is maybe a good time for us to step back and take a look anew. But there are always a number of factors that we have to take into consideration, and among them, the fact that we have to decide whether our goal is to try to get more money for the state out of a declining pot, or whether together we can find ways to increase the total revenues while still being sensitive to and investing in the problem gambling issues and the rest of it. So I think all of those are going to be on the table. We're not, personally, I'm not going into it. I don't think that the commission, we have a very new commission. In fact, you're just about, I hope, to approve a new commission member for us. But I don't know if there's anyone on there who has been there for more than 2 years. So a lot of people are looking at it from a fresh standpoint. I know the chair, Lisa Zono, is very interested in taking a fresh look at this, and that's what we're all committed to do. But because it's a fresh look, I can't tell you what the result of that will be and where we'll end up. I do think it's important that we understand that the retailers throughout the lottery system are really our distribution system, and in a sense, they are our partners. And so it's always been my view, and when I was in private practice and negotiating partnership agreements or contracts with people, that the successful partnerships are one where both sides are making money and both sides are invested in the success of the venture. And we want that to continue. But that doesn't mean that because we've had a certain approach in the past, and in fact, I think there's probably frustration on both sides' part with where all of those items are coming out today, and an opportunity to look at that anew will be important, and that's what we plan to do. And we're going to have an opportunity as a working with the commission. We hope to have a retreat and sort of get some ideas going on a lot of these issues fairly soon and give us a chance to take a fresh look at everything.
Thank you, Madam Chair, just to follow up, I don't disagree with you about, you know, it's not one or the other. Obviously, you want a successful system that works for everyone. It's just there's a mentality, and I chair the Finance Committee when I'm not busy in rules here. There is a mentality whenever taxpayer dollars and basically public dollars are going to these commissions because this is a government function, they quickly become an entitlement. They get baked into the selling price of a tavern. They become something that people, even though it's a contract, even though it's a finite contract, that people take for granted and look at almost as an entitlement. And what I'm looking for is that you'll really give it a fresh look and not feel bound by the fact that this is an expectation that you have. You want to treat your partners well, but your real partners are the people of Oregon. And the people, for every dollar that goes out to a commission or every dollar that's lost to the economy through a problem gambler, that's a dollar that's lost from the people you really work for. And so I just wanted to hear that you're going to really take a look at the whole big picture, and the fact that, you know, just having a happy partner is not all you're after.
I absolutely agree with that. But again, I can't help but also point out that if we're going to enlist their help in dealing with some of the problem gambling, if we're going to enlist their help in putting some limitations on how big they can grow and what they can do, that has to factor into the other part of the equation as well. So I'm agreeing with you, but I'm trying to make it clear that looking at the whole picture doesn't simply mean that they make less. It may mean they make their money in different ways and that we incentivize different types of behavior that will be commensurate with the public interest, as is our charge under the Constitution.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Senator Burdick. And I just want to associate myself with Senator Burdick's question, because I think it has been a source of frustration for some of us who have tried to weigh in when the commission rates have come up for renewal, and just felt like all of our comments have fallen on deaf ears, and that largely we've just re-upped the existing system. I mean, I would have thought it was clear in statute even that we are trying to maximize revenue to the state. That's why we're in the lottery to begin with, and that is the goal. And I'm not aware that people have been sending those video poker terminals back and nobody wants them anymore. So it clearly is a highly profitable business, although I take your point about wanting to make sure that we're looking at all the ways of maximizing revenue. But I think that is important. So.
No question that's important, that those are all things that we need to take in consideration. One of the things that we that I'm committed to doing, and I believe that the commission is, to maybe be more open and transparent with some of the dialogue that we have. Doesn't mean, I mean, at the end of the day, obviously, we have the responsibility for doing the negotiating and making the agreements, but we would like to hear your input. But I think we need to be more open about some of the factors that we're taking into consideration and looking at, because I've already heard from some people who have suggested that part of what happens, it's not just numbers of machines, but it's hours of operation, and how do we help encourage people to stay open and do that, and then what impact does that have on the community around them and their neighbors? So all of those things are trade-offs that we have to take into consideration. And so while we love your input, I think we need to maybe be more open about whatever decision we end up agreeing to, whatever we have, explaining why we did that and why we believe that is consistent with our charge.
Okay, great. Any other questions for Mr. Roberts? Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll be acting on this at the close of the hearing today.
Thank you.
I'll close the public hearing. Next, I'll open a public hearing on the appointment of Elizabeth Carl to the Oregon State Lottery Commission. She's here with us, and next we'll be going to the State Marine Board. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you.
If you'd like to just introduce yourself, tell us a little about your background and why you'd like to serve on the Lottery Commission.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. My name is Liz Carl. I live and work in Corvallis. I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you and address this committee regarding my nomination to serve on the Lottery Commission. I'm an attorney with 22 years of litigation and experience, first as a state prosecutor in Benton County and now as a family law lawyer. I've tried numerous complex child sex abuse cases resulting in lengthy prison sentences. I've also tried other serious felony matters, including homicide cases. And in my family law practice, I spend a fair amount of time litigating high conflict dissolution matters. And I also regularly represent victims of domestic violence and stalking. And that's all relevant to the fact that I'm no stranger to conflict resolution, and I take pride in finding just solutions to a wide variety of problems across the spectrum. Be it fiscal, political, or social, the impact of the Oregon Lottery upon our citizenry cannot be overstated. Striking the correct balance between the varied and competing interests associated with operating a state lottery is critical to the continued success of such an immensely important program. And with the Oregon Lottery going through a number of important transitions, I believe there is ample opportunity for further improvement. And I'm excited by the prospect of working to help make the lottery even stronger than it already is. So I am honored that Governor Kitzhaber has nominated me to serve on this commission. Thank you.
Thank you for your willingness to take it on. Questions? Okay, looks like we don't have any questions for you. Maybe you were lucky that you followed the new director, a new
Perhaps.
Director appointee.
So.
Okay,
thank you.
Thanks again. I'll close this public hearing and open a public hearing on the appointment of Clifford Jett to the State Marine Board. Thanks for waiting so patiently. I think as one of the previous nominees said, it's been at least an entertaining and international hearing so far. So, but we're certainly looking forward to hearing from you a little about your background and why you'd like to serve on the Marine Board.
Thank you, Madam Chair Rosenbaum and senators on the committee. My name is Cliff Jett. I'm from Rufus, Oregon, in Senate District 29, and I appreciate the opportunity to address the committee. I am interested in being considered for the position of Oregon State Marine Board, but I've been involved in recreational boating since I was a teenager, and I've been a professional boating law enforcement officer for nearly 35 years. I worked for the Nevada Department of Wildlife for 24 years, retired from that position. While I was there, I was a boating officer for Lake Mead. The last 10 years that I was a supervisor for Region 3 law enforcement in the state, and Region 3 covered about 40,000 square miles. I did a boating activities consistent with recreational law enforcement on Lake Mead,
Lake Mojave and 15 miles of the Colorado River in southern Nevada. In 2002, I attended Oregon Marine Academy, became the Sherman County Marine Deputy patrolling lower Deschutes River, 50 miles of the Columbia River, and 10 miles of the lower John Day. And I was a boat operator instructor at the Oregon Marine Academy for 2 years. My government experience, I am a current mayor of the city of Rufus. I have been the mayor for 15 years. I've served, am serving on several boards. Those boards include the Mid-Columbia Council of Governments. I've been on that board for 10 years. The Area Commission on Transportation, I've been on that for 9. Mid-Columbia Economic Development, been there for 9 years. Sherman County Development League for 7. And the North Central Oregon Regional Solutions Team, I've been on that committee for 1 year. The experience that I've acquired over the years would be helpful in making decisions as a Marine member of the Marine Board. I have interest in access, safety, and development of reasonable regulations for the boating public and the economic impact of recreational boating on the state of Oregon. I'd like to thank you, Chair Rosenblum, for the opportunity to be here. Thank you, Senators, for your time.
Great. Thank you for your willingness to serve. Any questions for Mr. Jett? Okay. Thank you again for being here today, and we'll be acting on this, the close of the hearing today, with a recommendation.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll close this public hearing. I think our next person is joining us by telephone. So let's let her through. Hi, is this Kelly McIntosh?
Yes, it is.
Kelly, this is Senator Dianne Rosenbaum, Chair of the Senate Rules Committee, and I'm opening a public hearing on your appointment, Kelly McIntosh, to the State Board of Direct Entry Midwifery. And here in the hearing room in Salem with me are Senators Lee Beyer and Senator Bruce Starr. We have a couple of other members who are out of the room at the moment. And so what we'd like to hear from you is a little bit about your background and why you'd like to serve on the Midwifery Board.
Okay, thank you. My name is Kelly McIntosh. I am a certified professional midwife licensed by the state of Oregon. I graduated from Berthing Way College of Midwifery with a Bachelor of Science degree in midwifery. I have been a practicing midwife for 9 years. In that time, I have also volunteered for numerous activities within my local midwifery organization, the Oregon Midwifery Council. I have been on the planning committee for 2 national conferences for the Midwives Alliance of North America. I have traveled to Haiti to work with mothers and babies there, and I have served 2 years as a CASA with families in the foster care system. I am interested in serving on the Midwifery Board to be involved in promoting midwifery for mothers and babies, and I care about the care that mothers and babies receive. I would like to be a part of creating policies that provide safe and positive outcomes for families surrounding their birth.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you for your willingness to serve on this important board. Do we have any questions for Ms. McIntosh? Okay, I don't see any questions, so thank you for joining us by telephone. And the way this works is we'll be acting with a recommendation from the committee at the close of today's hearing, and then tomorrow the full Senate will meet at 4 o'clock and vote on your appointment and all the others under consideration. So we'll have it'll be official by tomorrow. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Great. And I'll close the public hearing, and next I'll open a public hearing on the appointment of Travis Argue to the State Plumbing Board. And after this, we'll go to the Safe Corporation Board of Directors. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee. And I think by now you know the drill. We'd love to hear a little bit about your background and why you'd like to serve on the Plumbing Board.
Thank you, Senator Rosenbaum, and the committee. My background
if you just say your name again.
Travis Argue. I live in Gresham, Oregon. My background is I've worked in all facets of the plumbing industry, from everything from residential plumbing to commercial to industrial. I've
completed a 5-year instructor training back in Michigan from the UA. I am a current instructor at Local 290. I teach advanced blueprint drawings, and I teach many different classes in our hall. I also go to outreach to public high schools in Oregon and Washington to basically to give the kids exposure to the trades, to let them understand that there's other alternatives to employment in that area. The reason I'm interested in serving on the plumbing board would be I have an extensive amount of knowledge when it comes to the plumbing code part of it. I deal with some of the committees already. I just feel that the public safety is priority one when it comes to the plumbers, and I understand the consequences if things were not held to the standard that they are as far as disease and stuff like that. So I feel like I have a pretty good knowledge of that.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Argue? Any questions? Okay, well, I'll ask you one. So I think one of the things the legislature's been trying to do is provide more funding to revitalize some of the career and technical education or vocational education programs in our schools. And I'm wondering, since you train people who've gotten through high school, what you're seeing in terms of the awareness or readiness level of young people who are applying for the apprenticeship that you teach in.
To be honest with you, a lot of kids are not exposed to what the apprenticeship programs are and what the skill entry levels would be. You know, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of shop classes anymore, and kids are not seeing, as silly as this may sound, they don't even know how to read a tape measure. And so our union hall has outreach to several of the areas, high schools, with a pilot program for the students to actually come and take a shop class at our union hall. And I facilitate in part of that program as well. It's an eye-opener to the kids to understand that, you know, when you turn the water on, it's not a miracle. I'm being quite frank. You know, I mean, they don't understand that the room temperature in this building is maintained by water. It's not, you know, it's not. But as far as their... In school, I believe what's happening in the past has been that the higher education has been the promotion of a lot of people. And I agree that that's part of what it is, but the kids also have to have, you know, some kids aren't cut out for school. And some, not the school isn't part of what our program is, but our program is a lot like it's more of a hands-on type of a deal. And so we find that the kids that are applying for our apprenticeship a lot of times are 27, 28-year-old guys, that this is their third time trying to make a career, and they're finally figuring out that this is a career that they can do. It's not always the uneducated. We have several people who apply for our apprenticeship with college degrees and are paying student loans, and, you know, they're struggling to make ends meet to start over on a career. So to answer your question as far as their education levels or if they're up to date, that's kind of what you asked, wasn't it? I think we need to put a little bit more back into the schools to give these kids exposure to what, you know, other than a computer.
Right. So, well, that's, I think, what these CTE programs are trying to do. So hopefully, as this moves forward, it'll get better. And I think it's great that you reach out to the schools and provide some of that directly. So.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your willingness to serve.
Thank you.
And I'll close this public hearing and open a public hearing on the appointment of Kevin Jensen to the Board of Directors of the SAFE Corporation. And thank you very much for waiting so patiently. Welcome to the Senate Rules
Committee. Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, Senators. Kevin Jensen, I'm a business manager for the ironworkers in Portland, Oregon. I've been involved in the construction industry for something over 35 years. Very simply, my interest in this SAFE Board of Directors is to help facilitate that injured workers are treated fairly and justly and that they return to the workforce and, you know, become once again productive members of the society and of citizens of Oregon. I've seen over my course of my career a number of injuries. I deal with it on a weekly, if not daily, basis in my current position as business manager. And again, it's my hope that I can affect and have a voice on that board that is representative of the injured worker. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any questions?
No question.
Yes, go ahead, Senator Starr.
So I appreciate you being here, and thank you for being willing to serve. Talk a little bit about your perspective on SAFE overall. I mean, it seems like when you look at the workers' comp situation in other states, the situation in Oregon is pretty, things are going pretty well. Do you agree with that? Do you think that there's places that we should improve? I agree that we need to provide, you know, safety for our workers and get them back to work as quickly as we can. But I think we have a pretty balanced system here in Oregon today. You know, just want to comment on some of those thoughts?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Starr. I believe that there's always a room for improvement in any system that we have. But from the limited knowledge I have of SAFE, I believe that we are giving the employers a fair choice as to how they insure their workers. And that's the other part of the equation, is how do we make sure that employers have that choice to provide reasonable, affordable insurance for their workers on the job site.
Great, thanks.
Okay, thank you. And so I have never been an iron worker, but I know it's a very dangerous occupation. So in terms of what you're seeing in your industry or construction generally, are you seeing problems with compliance, like not employers that aren't carrying workers' comp at all, or are you seeing problems with safety on the job? What do you see as the big challenges?
Chair Rosenbaum, the challenge I see is not so much those catastrophic industries or injuries. It's what we would call occupational disease or repetitive injury. After 35 years of physical labor, your knees are wore out, your shoulders are wore out, your hips are wore out. Mm-hmm. Job sites are getting safer and safer as we move forward, and as people take that responsibility for lower insurance rates that they gain by having safe job sites. So my real concern for not only for our members but for everybody that works for a living is that over the course of a career you are going to wear your body out, and how do we take care of those people and how do we treat them fairly at the end of the day?
Right. So it's really the ergonomic type of injuries.
Exactly.
How to prevent them if you can, and then what you do
mm-hmm.
with
yes.
people that can't work anymore. Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for your willingness to serve on the SAFE Board.
Thank you.
And I'll close this public hearing and open a public hearing on the appointment of Laura Tu to the Sustainability Board. If you'd like to come forward. Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee. Thanks for waiting so patiently, and we're eager to hear about your background and why you'd like to serve on the Sustainability Board.
Thank you so much. I'd like to start by thanking Governor Kitzhaber for having me here, and also Chair Rosenbaum and members of the Senate Committee. Also, special congratulations to you, Senator Starr, on your new appointment. So my name is Laura Tu. I live in Southeast Portland, where I'm actually lucky enough to be a constituent in Chair Rosenbaum's district. As a nominee for the Oregon Sustainability Board, I take this privilege very seriously, especially in terms of representing a variety of stakeholders. For many years, I led creative strategy at a global Fortune 500 company, and from that experience, I really learned the power of scale, smart partnerships, and working together. And now I work at a small private Oregon business where I serve nonprofits, public affairs, and state government. And from this experience, I'm really learning the power of purpose. Specifically, you know, all of the work that I do in my current role is really just for benefiting Oregonians and making this place a better place to live now and for the future. So you know, that's really why I feel passionate about joining the Oregon Sustainability Board. It really is for the comprehensive systems-based approach that this board takes. And I really believe that together we can create a shared value that sustains, protects, and enhances our environment, our economy, and our communities. Thank you very much.
Great. Well, thank you for taking this on, and it's great to know that you're in my district, and it's an honor to represent you.
Oh, thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Tu? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll close the public hearing and next open a public hearing on the appointment of Dr. Charles Martinez to the State Board of Education. I believe he's joining us by telephone. Hello, is this Charles Martinez?
Yes, it is.
Hello, Dr. Martinez. This is Diane Rosenbaum, and I am the Senate Chair of the Senate Rules Committee. We're here in Salem, and with me are Senators Lee Beyer and Senator Bruce Starr. And we have just opened a hearing on your appointment to the State Board of Education. So we'd like to hear from you just briefly about what your background is and why you would like to serve on the State Board of Education.
Yes, thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and esteemed senators. My name is Charles Martinez. I live down here in Eugene. I want to thank you for allowing me to join the committee hearing by telephone, and I apologize if I was not able to join you in person today. I have been listening here in Eugene in the spirit of the international nature of, of many of the callers. I've just returned from a research trip from Guatemala. The squeezing of my schedule made the juggling difficult, so I do apologize for that. It is my great honor to be nominated to serve as a member of the State Board of Education. I'm a professor here at the University of Oregon, where I also direct the Center for Equity Promotion, and I'm the department head of the Department of Educational Methodology, Policy, and Leadership. So my son asked me recently over dinner, "Dad, why are you doing this?" And my son is a 14, and he attends a school here in Eugene. And he has some familiarity with public service from my past life as a publicly elected member of the Eugene School Board. And so he was sort of asking me, "Well, what is the reason? What's the passion to do this?" And so I thought of really about the State Board of Education and what it meant to me to make the time of my schedule to serve in this capacity. And what it really boils down to for me, given the work and passion that I have, is really about how to ensure access to the highest quality of education for our Oregonians, and how to ensure equity and outcomes for all students. And fundamentally, that is the core goal of the State Board of Education. And that gets, of course, transmitted to the work of individual districts. Of course, in answering my son, he wanted to know how I could help him with the math book he was struggling with, which wasn't quite my answer wasn't quite precise enough for him. But it is fundamentally why I'm interested in service on the State Board.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you for being willing to take this on. It sounds like you've got a busy career down there already, and I'm glad you didn't have to call in from Guatemala, but it sounds like that was a great trip, too.
It would have been more difficult from there.
I bet, for sure. Okay, any questions for Dr. Martinez? Okay, it doesn't look like we have any questions for you, so I'll thank you for your time, and we'll be acting with a recommendation on your appointment at the close of the hearing today, and then tomorrow the full Senate will meet in the afternoon and vote on your appointment and the others, and so just stay tuned, and hopefully it'll all go well.
Thank you so much, and to all of you for your service to Oregon.
Great. Thanks again. Bye-bye. Okay, I'll close the public hearing, and this is our last of the ones for today other than the reappointments, and I'll open a public hearing on the appointments of Brianna Hansen and Robert Garcia to the Board of Commissioners of the International Port of Coos Bay. I believe Brianna Hansen is here in the room, so if you'd like to come forward and sit at the dais. And is Robert Garcia on the phone? Hello?
Hello.
Hi, is this Robert Garcia?
Yes.
Hi, this is Diane Rosenbaum. I am the chair of the Senate Committee on Rules, and here in the Capitol with me are Senators Lee Beyer and Senator Bruce Starr, two of the five members of the Senate Rules Committee. So I have just opened a public hearing on your appointment and that of Brianna Hansen to the Port of Coos Bay Board of Commissioners. We're going to ask Brianna, since she's here in person, to go first, and then we'll go to you and ask you each to tell us a little about your background and why you'd like to serve on the Port of Coos Bay Commission. So please go ahead.
Thank you. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, thank you for hearing me today. For the record, my name is Brianna Hansen, and I live in Coos Bay, Oregon. And I've been nominated to serve as a port commissioner for the Port of Coos Bay. I'd feel tremendously honored to have this opportunity. My background more recently was I worked for a global company that traded commodities, and I led their marketing department and set up a supply chain as a part of that. Logistics was a component. And for us and any commodities company, which a lot of the companies down there are grain or forestry related in the Coos Bay area, freight is a major component. So the rehabilitation of the rail line and the other activities that the port carries out are instrumental to their economic success. I feel the responsibility of people in our area. They're looking for work. There's a lot right now for the ecology of the area. It's a gorgeous area, lots of marine life there, and for the well-being of generations to come. My husband and I are expecting our daughter in January. I don't take this as a light. You know, I understand that this is going to be a large responsibility, and I take it seriously. I decided to go ahead and step forward because I really believe in the potential of Coos Bay and the port there, and I would just like to do everything I can to really help maximize that. So thank you for your time and your consideration.
Great. And would you like to introduce your husband? I saw somebody very proudly taking your picture as you came up here. So
this is my husband, and we actually met when we were interns in Senator Smith's office in D.C. We actually got together when we were in
D.C. Oh, great. That's a great story. So some good things do come out of politics. Okay. Well, thank you for being here to support your wife, and thank you for taking this on. Do we have any questions for Ms. Hansen before I go to the other appointee? Okay. Mr. Garcia, please go ahead.
Well, good afternoon. My name is Bob Garcia. I live at 2335 Everett in North Bend, Oregon. I am chairman of the Confederated Tribes of Coos, Lorump, and Siuslaw Indians. I also serve on the Legislative Commission on Indian Services. I attended Reed College and Portland State University as far as prior experience. I was the tribe's economic development director for a number of years, and am now in my day job assistant general manager of our Three Rivers Casino in Florence, Oregon. Mm-hmm. And as far as kind of understanding the importance of the port to the community, my family goes way, way back in the Coos Bay area, and my grandfather, you know, lived in Coos Bay at a time when the way to get from Coos Bay to Portland by the most direct method was to actually take a steamer from Coos Bay to Astoria and from Astoria, you know, to Portland. Mm-hmm. And certainly in the 1920s, it was a long, long mm-hmm. ways away from Coos Bay to Portland. And certainly the International Port of Coos Bay is a great way to move trade, commerce. The rail link is an important, you know, piece that is absolutely necessary, and I look forward to the opportunity to supporting the port in its very necessary business to make a more vital Coos Southwest Coast community.
Okay, great. Well, yeah, that sounds like we've come a long way since that the days when you had to take a steamer. So, okay, did we have any questions for Mr. Garcia? Okay, I don't see any questions for you either. So, well, thank you for joining us, both of you, and we'll be making a recommendation from the committee and then tomorrow afternoon vote on your appointments. And thank you again for your willingness to serve.
Thank you.
Okay, so that concludes our hearing, and then we have to make motions, and I think I'll ask the committee to stand at ease for just a moment while we see if the other members want to join us for the vote. So what committee will stand at ease? to order. And the chair has consulted with committee members, and we will be having first a big unblock motion, and then we've had a request to separate out the faculty voting members of each institutional board. Each is a separate motion, so there will be three more motions after this big one. Okay, I'm opening a work session and moving the following appointments and reappointments to the following boards and commissions to the Senate floor with the recommendation that they be confirmed en bloc. Robert Garcia and Brianna Hansen to the Board of Commissioners of the Oregon International Port of Coos Bay. Bradley Christie and Susan Turley to the Oregon Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists. Michael Golub and Chris Van Dyke to the Trust for Cultural Development Board. Charles Martinez to the State Board of Education. Melinda Eden to the Environmental Quality Commission. Lisa Phipps to the Governing Board of the State Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. Prashant Dubey to the Oregon Health and Science University Board of Directors. Irene Croswell, Samnath Saha, James Tayak, and Beth Westbrook to the Health Evidence Review Commission. Ken Allen and Jose Gonzalez to the Oregon Health Insurance Exchange Corporation. Gary Gillespie and Edward Necker to the Lane Transit District Board. Martin Rivol to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Jack Roberts as the State Lottery Director. Elizabeth Carl to the Oregon State Lottery Commission. Clifford Jett to the State Marine Board. Kelly McIntosh to the State Board of Direct Entry Midwifery. Taylor Sarman, Kirk Schuler, John Turner, Patricia Reeser, Paul Kelly, Gerald Callahan, Orsilia Forbes, Michelle Etter, Laura Noms, Ronnie Borker, Patricia Bedient, and Elson Floyd to the Board of Trustees for Oregon State University, Travis Argue to the State Plumbing Board, James Carter to the Board of Commissioners of the Port of Portland, Pam Campos Palma, Swati Adarkar, Gail Castillo, Tom Imeson, Carl Miller, Farah Boris Massey, Peter Stott, Peter Nickerson, Christine Vernier, and Sho Dezano to the Board of Trustees of Portland State University, Kevin Jensen to the Board of Directors of the State Accident Insurance Fund Corporation, Chris Brantley to the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, Robin Collin and Laura Tu to the Sustainability Board, and finally, Sam Daughters-Katz, Rodolfo Chapa, Connie Bomber, Ann Curry, Charles Lilly, Ross Carey, Joseph Gagne, Ginevra Ralph, Peter Bragdon, Alan Ford, Andrew Skolas, and Mary Wilcox to the Board of Trustees of the University of Oregon. Any discussion on the motion?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Starr.
Thank you. I've given the same couple of comments, I think, after every one of these hearings, but I am continually amazed at the quality and caliber of Oregonians that are willing to volunteer, except for a new lottery commissioner out there, director. But for the most part, they volunteer their time and energy in order to make Oregon a great state. And, you know, this crop of nominees, appointees, do not disappoint. So some of you have stuck around and for the entire hearing, so I appreciate that. But those that aren't here, I wish that they could hear, all of the resumes and see the caliber of individuals that are willing to serve their fellow citizens. So just wanted to make that comment.
Yes, I agree. And I think that your comment was on the non-volunteer nature of the lottery director position, not on the caliber of the nominees.
There you go. Exactly.
He's very impressive, too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He just gets paid for it.
Yes. Right. Any other discussion on the motion?
None.
Okay. Any objection to the motion? If not, so ordered. And we do need a carrier. I think the chair carried this motion last time. So Senator Starr, would you like to carry this on the floor?
Sure.
Great. So Senator Starr will carry. And now we have our additional motions. I'll open a work session and move the appointment of Susan Gary and Kirk Wilcox to the Board of Trustees of the University of Oregon to the Senate floor with the recommendation that they be confirmed. Any discussion on the motion?
No, sure.
Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, this goes for all of the members that will be subject to these separate motions. I think they're absolutely wonderful, wonderfully well qualified, and I think that I could only echo Senator Starr's comments about their qualifications and abilities to serve. The only hesitation associated with these folks is that they would have voting membership and be members at the same time of the faculty and staff of the institutions they'll govern. That creates an automatic conflict of interest, such that even the nominees themselves have indicated that they would either have to recuse themselves or adopt working rules on the committee that would allow them to not be present for certain discussions or to take certain votes that would put them in a conflict of interest. I think it's a very poor way for us to operate, and the solution to that problem is to either make them non-voting members or for the legislature to adopt a statute that allows for non-voting members or some sort of a recusal process. So, Madam Chair, without a comment other than appreciation for the folks that have been nominated for their willingness to serve, I'll be voting no because of that technical issue that I think has proven to be disastrous in the past and may again. So that's my comment.
Okay, thank you for the comment. Further discussion? Okay, seeing none. Zoe, would you please call the roll?
Senator Beyer.
Aye.
Senator Burdick.
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berry?
No.
Chair Rosenbaum?
Aye. Motion carries. And Senator Beyer, since the U of O is in your district. Is it in your district? Yes, it is.
It is in my district.
Yes, of course. Okay. Thank you for carrying this. And I'll open a work session and move the appointments of Maude Hines and Erica Bestpitch to the Board of Trustees of Portland State University to the Senate floor with the recommendation that they be confirmed. And just to remind committee members, I should have said this before, but we did hear from all the other appointees to all three of these institutional boards that are hearing in September. So that's why they didn't appear again today. Okay, any discussion on this motion? Senator Ferrioli, I take it that your comment previously did apply to this motion.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
The other one as well. Okay, Zoe, would you, any further discussion? Zoe, please call the roll.
Senator Beyer?
Yes.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Vice Chair Ferrioli?
No.
Chair Rosenbaum?
Aye. Motion carries. And Senator Beyer, since you're carrying the others, would you
sure.
carry this too? Okay, thank you. Senator Beyer will carry, and I'll close the work session. And I'll open a work session and move the appointments of Brenda McComb and Mark Baldwin to the Board of Trustees of Oregon State University to the Senate floor with the recommendation that they be confirmed. Is there any discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none, Zoe, would you please call the roll?
Senator Beyer?
Aye.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Vice Chair Ferrioli?
No.
Chair Rosenbaum?
Aye. Motion carries. And Senator Beyer,
sure.
Three's the charm. Mm-hmm. So, okay, great. You probably won't have to make the same speech three times. Okay, thank you, committee members, for your patience.
You're supposed to say ditto.
Our floor session is at 4 o'clock tomorrow, right, Erin? And with nothing further to come before us today, we're adjourned. Before us today, we're adjourned. Further